all mud and looking so terrible, and you come home and your shirt is torn and you've lost your cap and you've rolled in the mud. And she'd say, what happened to his cap? Mostly I'd take it home or his coat or whatever, you know. He was always losing things because he couldn't be bothered with that kind of thing. He was so busy doing these other things.
What was a typical, like, breakfast, lunch, and dinner then?
Oh, yes, we always had a good breakfast. My father usually made the biscuits. We had bacon or something like that, and eggs, and just fruit. My mother canned lots of fruit. We took our lunch with us to school, and it was just like any lunch would be nowadays. Maybe there'd be gingerbread, if there was gingerbread in the house, and there would be sandwiches, fruit, apple, or whatever. And we had little jars. We'd take canned fruit sometimes. And then we'd have dinner in the evening. We had meat, potatoes, and gravy, and, you know, just things like that. We didn't live. My mother made cakes and pies. And on Sunday, the house would be full of kids. I'll never forget it. We'd all go to Sunday school, you know. We all went to the same place. And then here would be the whole gang up to our house. My mother made cakes and pies. And on Sunday, the house would be full of kids. I'll never forget it. We'd all go to Sunday school, you know. We all went to the same place. And then here would be the whole gang up to our house, a whole bunch of them. The table had all the leaves in it, and my mother never thought anything about it. She just got dinner for the whole bunch. We'd just play around. Maybe we'd play baseball or play something, and then we'd all go in and eat, and we just had a general good time, and then gradually the crowd had to go home.
What were some things that kept busy, you know, your entertainment at home? There wasn't any television there.
Heavens no, we never... We didn't have to be entertained. Oh, we never thought of such a thing. We could read, or we could do our lessons, or we could... We were busy. We had to work, you know. There was so much to be done, and we all had our duties, and we did them.
So
there
wasn't too much time for...
And we went to bed early, because we got up early. My father always got up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
What time did normally... Everybody go to bed.
I know my dad usually went to bed between 7 and 8. And we would go to bed 8 or 9 or whatever. And then we had parties at this house and parties at that house now and then. But it wasn't a regular thing. It was an occasion. We would have hay rides. We'd have sleigh rides. We'd go to one house and have oyster soup some night. And we'd all go in a big sleigh together.
So this all the ones that are around you, or were there the ones in your class?
Well, not necessarily.
Just whoever was there.
Whoever, you know, whoever we were going to Sunday school with, or whoever we were, you know, it didn't matter. Usually they were, if there was more than one class, it would be two classes. You know, we usually were about like that. And we'd have just parties, and we'd have taffy pulls, and I don't remember.
What are some of the greatest, biggest changes from, say, back when you were growing up compared to now, for, you know, around the house or eating?
Oh, we all heated with wood. You just fixed the fire in the stove, and that did the whole thing.
How many stoves are...
Well, usually there was a stove in the living area and one in the kitchen. And now in this house, there's a chimney for a stove in all the rooms upstairs. And I think there's one room that don't have a, there's only one room. There's three bedrooms upstairs and only one of them doesn't have a chimney. And of course there's still a stove in the bathroom up there. And I've kept it and it's just as nice as it ever was. Good little iron stove they brought with them from South Dakota. And no central heating and no laying in bed, I assure you. And you went to bed early and you got up early and you did a lot of work before you went to school. And when you came home, you had dinner by the time the dishes were done and the separator dishes were done after the milking. The boys had to help milk. And the girls had separator dishes and supper dishes and everything to do. And if there was a little time, they could read or do their lessons or whatever they wanted to do, and then it was time for bed. You didn't have a lot of entertainment. You never, and you never missed it. You talked on the telephone some.
What kind of telephone did you have? The old
kind that hung on the wall and you rang with a crank. And you called Central, and you told Central what you wanted or who you wanted. And she'll talk to you a little while, and then she gets whoever you want, and you can tell her, you know, everything. She knows everything. And and everybody. And all you have to do, if you needed a doctor, was ring Central and say, call the doctor quick. Somebody's needing a doctor.
The doctor in Cole's that the
yes.
Doctor's father, then?
Yes. My dad didn't do any doctoring. No.
But I mean, you know, he was there to help you, but not as
he was there to help us, but that was it. But I do remember that everybody did things for the other fellow. Now, if a woman was left a widow, the first thing my father did was find out if she had plenty of wood. And if it was deep snow in the winter and she didn't have enough wood, he hitched up the horses to the sled and went to the mountains and brought her wood. And he'd go and see the wood saw people. There was people there with a wood saw that would saw the logs. And her wood was sawed and she had wood.
The sawmill right in town there, was it? Cool.
The sawmill, well, quite a ways up.
Up Mill Creek?
We used to, in the summertime, we'd all hike up to the light plant in the Four Bay, and we'd walk up to the top of Mount Fanny, and we'd take one horse for our lunch, and usually someone grown up, teacher, parent, or somebody would go with us. We'd go up there and have a snowball fight and have our lunch, and then we'd turn around and walk back and walk home. Thought nothing of it. We walked all those miles.
How long did it take to get up there about?
My gosh, I don't remember. If anybody got tired, they'd take hold of the horse's tail and the horse would help them up the hill a little bit. And it was just, you know, like that. That's where they nicknamed me, one of the kids. You know, my name was long and kind of involved, you know, so they'd holler, "Coming, Mike?" So I was like, after that, that's where I got my nickname. Don never called me anything but Mike. And so that's kind of the way it was, and they'd have Sunday school picnics up there on top of the mountain. Somehow or other, people walked.
Oh, get a good view. Take
a guide. Oh, beautiful view. It's not as far as the kids would say nowadays. I don't think they can make it now. But they really just, you know, did things like that. We'd have parties someplace way up the hill. We all walked together up to the party, you know. It was kind of a, they didn't pair off so much. They just went in, the whole bunch went. I remember one time one of the boys said he was going to take me to the party. Well, that was all right because you all went, you know, together. And you'd just walk with him. And so this other kid was, he lived there with another family for 2 or 3 years. And so he came right away and asked me if I'd go to the party with him. I didn't think anything about it. I said yes. So here he came. He had a horse and buggy. I was so disgusted. I was so disgusted. And I couldn't say anything. I went and got in the buggy, and that was it. We went, and here we were driving along, and everybody else was walking. Boy, I never had anything to do with him after that. I was all through with that guy.
You got too fancy.
I wasn't going to be any different than the rest of them, you know. He was just, that was just too much. And we went way up on the hill to a party, and I think he must have been raised in some town or something. And he thought that was a way to take a girl, you know. But he moved away in a couple of years, and I never saw him again. Never knew what happened to him. But he was a cousin of one of the kids, you know, and he came up there and lived with them a couple of years for some reason. And that's kind of the way we were. We all would get in this sled and go skating down on the river, build a fire, and just skate away down there, you know. And I had one weak ankle, and you know the skates they had in those days, they climbed down to your shoes. And they were not as stable as they might have been. We had, it's amazing how we lived. I don't know how we lived through that. But we'd take weenies and roast them and just have a good time, and then all pile into the sled, go back home. We never stayed real late. And just things like that was our entertainment.
What about during when you didn't have the ice skating or the ice? What did you do during the spring, fall, and summer?
Oh, we just mostly stayed home, but we'd have a party here and there, now and then, and go to somebody's house and have a taffy pull or in the yard or something like that, and just generally.
I remember any special holidays, any celebrations of that?
Not too much. Most of our holidays were spent going to grandmother's or having the grandparents at our house or something like that. We didn't think we had to celebrate it any special way, only with...
What was the biggest thing for good or bad?
Well, I think that was a good time to grow up. I think we were very happy. The kids would come over to your house. You'd sit on the lawn in the summertime and talk. And maybe you'd go and pick some apples, or you'd go pick some cherries or something, and just laugh and talk. And
just enjoy life.
Just enjoy life, yeah. And didn't say anything about it. You helped at home a lot. Your home and your family were more important to you than anything, really.
Pretty busy where you didn't have time to worry about.
We didn't have time to do a lot of these other things because we didn't have the conveniences that we have now. We just had 2 dish pans that we did dishes in. And I remember when I was small, my mother was ironing, and she was not very well. And I was to do the dishes. And we had 2 stools that would put the dishpans on. I was so short, small. And so we had a tea kettle on the old stove, and that old stove was something. It had this top, of course, but it had a girth. It came out in front like this. And I went and got the tea kettle to scald the dishes. We always poured boiling water, all the dishes we'd washed. After we'd washed. washed them, and they were stacked in the other dishpan. The boiling water was poured all over them, you know. Well, I started out with a tea kettle, and the handle was hot. And I went back, and instead of putting the pear up on top, which was kind of high for me, I set it on this hearth. The hearth wasn't wide enough, and it tipped over and scalded me from the knees down. And just, and my mother set down the iron. Those days you heated your iron on the stove, you know, you just set the iron on. And she came over there and she saw how badly I was burned. And she went in the bedroom and tore a sheet in two and sprinkled flour in both sides. And first she took me out and set me in the big water tank that was out at the back where we got the water we used to wash and all that. There was a ditch that came down, filled that, and went on down. And she stood me in there while she fixed the flour and the sheet for me. And then she took me there and wrapped me, my legs and feet, in that flour. And, of course, that was terribly, terribly painful because that was boiling water. And then she went to the door and called my father. And he came and he carried me in, put me on the bed. And I walked on crutches that summer, all summer. And then my grandmother would come over after they began to get well, these huge burns. They were just practically boiled places on the top of my feet. And they would sterilize needles and pick the flour out of those cracks in there. They'd set me in one chair, have my feet up in the other, and grandmother would be working on one foot and my father on the other. My mother just couldn't do it. And they'd pick the flour out of those cracks. They were pretty good sized cracks at the top of my feet. And then my father would wrap them again, and I don't have one scar. Not a scar on my feet. They just took care of
me. Miraculous medicine.
It really was, wasn't it? And I think about that so often, you know, how they took care of that situation.
How old were you when that happened?
I suppose I might have been 8 or maybe 8 years old or something like that. And I just sat there and tough it out, you know. I never forget the pain on it. And all the needles came out of the boiling, out of boiling water, you know. And then they just picked that out carefully. And they just healed up just fine. You couldn't find one scar on my face. Wasn't that something? Of course, the bottom of them were tougher, and they healed up. But I never could go barefoot, and my feet were too tender. My brother went barefoot all the time. I remember coming in the house crying one time. Old Sue stepped on my bestest toe. You know, a horse had stepped on one of his toes, and he'd already stubbed the other one, and it was in bad shape. But he liked to go barefooted. And he did a lot of things. He was more fun than me. He always could think of something funny, and I never knew him to complain about anything in all his life.
Which one was that?
Haskell.
Oh, Haskell.
Called him Hack.
That's
later.
That's
Hack. He just accepted life the way it was. There was just nothing to it. That's all there was to it. If you don't like this, well, then do this. You know, that was his
philosophy.
His philosophy was. And if you can help somebody, help. If somebody had said to him, I'm cold and I need a shirt, he'd have given his shirt. He wouldn't have cared.
What you're talking about before, where they're hunting coyotes.
Oh, yes.
And horses.
Yeah, that was him. Well, we saw lots of things like that, we, you know, somehow or other, those kinds of events were big things, and it wasn't just here today and gone tomorrow. It was something you, you know, was made important to you. My father was a great hand to read. He was well read, and he was a whiz with math, which I didn't inherit. And I never liked it, but my mother was very good at geography and history. I remember that because that was easy for me.
Those are your favorite subjects in school?
Well, I guess it was. I still like history and all those kinds of things.
Do you remember, I was wondering, can you go over that again, that story of the of Hack with the horses there?
Well, my father said, come on, there's a porch off of our dining room out there. And he said, come out here and watch this. And so we all ran out there to watch what was going on. And these two old men, to me they were old men, they probably weren't, I don't know. But old John Smith, we called him, had a pen of hunting hounds. And old John Allen had a pen of hunting hounds. I don't know how they fed them in the wintertime, but meat was cheap, and I suppose they got bones and things at the meat market. And if an animal died, I suppose the hounds got it and all that kind of thing. Anyway, in the fall of the year when the coyotes got sick, we always called them coyotes, coyotes out on the hills, you know, and they were sick then. They had made horns out of cow's horns, and they would get on their horses, turn the dogs loose, and out they'd go after coyotes. And here they were sounding the horns, and the dogs were barking, and here was the coyote running fast as it could run the hounds right after, and over the hills and over the rocks and everything, and there we watched the whole thing going all the way around the hill. And at the back of our place was a rail fence. And, of course, Hack was just entranced with that. And he raced for the back of the place, and he got down in the corner of that rail fence and watching this whole thing, because he figured it'd come around that way, and it did. And it came right over to our hill pasture. And when he saw it coming right at him, he just ducked down in the corner of that fence. And over went the coyotes and the hounds and the horses and the men on the horses right over his head. He came back happy because he'd seen the whole thing. But it was quite a sight to see those old guys with their, you know, just going, I don't know how the horses got over all those rocks. You know, they just rode them like there was no tomorrow. The regular old English hunt. And they had guns, of course. I don't know whether they, I can't remember if they ever shot one or anything. I don't remember hearing that. But they had the chase, and they had the good time. And then they'd ride those horses home just as slowly, you know. The hounds, you too, they'd all be worn out. They'd go home, pen up their hounds. Of course, you know, horses don't generally like hounds. And I can remember my dad leading a horse, a young horse, down to drink. And it was one that he was keeping in the corral. And so he had to lead it to drink two or three times a day, you know. And here came one of old John's hounds, just right up there at the heels of that horse, that young horse. That horse just kicked once, and the dog never moved again. That was all it could just kill. And my dad came down, and he said, you know, I'm just sick about it, but old Model killed one of old John's hounds. He was loose, and he just came up there and was going to bite that horse on the heel. And the horse just kicked him, and he was dead. That was the end of the hound. So I don't remember hearing anything more about that, Now that happened right down there by that High Valley Bridge, where you come down there, you know?
Oh, yeah, where you get the highway.
Uh-huh. And I remember the gypsies used to go in down there and camp down there on our place right down there by the creek, you know. And how my mother was scared to death they'd get my little brother. He had curly red hair, and she just said, well, gypsies like blonde kids, you know. I remember my father took him down there and put him on some of their horses and visited with him. He was always good to everybody.
How did the gypsies travel? They just horseback, or they have a wagon?
They had wagons.
They had wagons.
Covered wagons and lots of horses, and they traded horses, and they traded people out of things and traded things to people for things. And I don't know where they got the money for what they ate, unless they traded for garden stuff and things like that, traveled in the summer. And so they would camp down there. Sometimes they'd stay a week, sometimes they'd only stay 2 or 3 days. And my mother was always relieved when they left. She didn't like that encampment down there. They'd play violins, just have a good time down there. They never failed to have a good time. But we were not allowed to go out of the yard when they were there. We stayed right. So I remember that, and of course that was exciting. My, that was exciting. But we always had gardens, and us kids had to work in the garden. In the summertime, you know, that took quite a bit of your time. Helping with the canning, helping with making jam, helping with all of that kind of thing. And putting down for the summer what we did in the winter, so we were pretty busy people. And then when it came time for our school clothes, we ordered a Bell's Hess and some other catalog. We would order if we didn't find what we wanted in LeGrand, or we didn't get to LeGrand, why, that was the way we did that.
How long did it take you to go to LeGrand about?
Well, I don't know. We usually had good teams that we just used for that, you know. Horses that could just travel right along. My grandfather had a pair of bays that he used for his covered buggy, and he called them Dot and Lady. And when we got in the buggy to go to LeGrand, I used to go with him quite a lot. He'd say, slap them on the hip, boy, they'd just take off. And we went to LeGrand, and, you know, just about as good time as anybody could with a pair of horses. And they'd be put in the livery stable while he did whatever he wanted. And he always took me with him. And then we'd go back home. We were never late going, never late coming back.
What all did you do while you were in LeGrand, remember?
Well, he had, in his cellar, he had brick vaults. And in the vaults was a solution that he put his eggs in. And he raised chickens, and of course he had milk cows. Well, anyway, and he always sold honey, too. And he would go down there with a net and take those eggs out carefully. And then he'd candle them. Over a lamp, he put a cardboard box, and it had holes in it the size of eggs. And they were sized, and you could see through the egg whether it was all right or not. And then it was put in the crate, and the whole crates were taken in to LeGrand. He sold his eggs, and he sold some chickens. And he sold whatever, you know, and whatever else. Your cream was usually picked up.
What did you do when you went with him?
I just went wherever he went.
No.
Tagged along. He just wanted me to go. And next door neighbor to him was Uncle Newton Merrick, I called him. And he was a Pony Express rider, you know. And I thought Uncle Newton was just great because Uncle Newton would take me fishing. And we'd go down the river and catfish. He'd sit there and talk, you know, and he told me about his rides on the Pony Express. And his wife was a short, fat, fat woman. And of course, she wasn't going any place. She just toddled around at home and did the cooking and things like that. She never thought of going fishing with him. I don't know whether she couldn't get in the buggy or what, but I never remember her ever going any place. And they had a cat that had one rocking chair, and it would even rock sometimes. And nobody sat in that rocking chair, but just that cat. And when I went over to, her name was Emmeline. So I go over to Uncle Newton and Aunt Emmeline. And then Grandpa said, well, I can't go fishing tomorrow, but Uncle Newton's going to go. And why don't you go with him? So I'd go fishing with Uncle Newton, and we'd sit there on the bank and catch catfish. And he talked to me, you know. He wasn't an awful company man, but he wanted company, and I was a little kid there that could go, and so I went.
How old were you then, about?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. From the time I was six, I suppose, until I was 10 or 12, I went fishing with Uncle Luke.
What kind of pole?
And Grandpa.
Basically.
We used worms and corks on the line and bamboo poles. And if we didn't have a bamboo pole, we used a willow. And just plain hooks with a worm on them. Throw it in there, and here'd be the cork sitting on top of the water, and all of a sudden the cork would dive, and you had a fish. Out would come the... And then Grandpa knew just how to clean them, you know, so did Uncle Newton. They had boards, and they had these sharp, real sharp, old-fashioned forks. That's the kind they used to have. They had bone handles and tines fairly close together and long. I have one, yes. And they put that in the fish's head, and they'd split him down the back, and then reach in with another fork and get the back of the fish. After they cut his head to it, just pull it right off of the skin. Just slick as that, and all clean. And they caught lots of them, and they were awfully good eating. So we did things like that in the summer when I'd be there. We never thought that we had to be doing something for entertainment all the time.
Well, that was your entertainment.
That was our entertainment, yeah.
What was the cat's name? Do you remember? Did you have a name?
I think they just called her Pussy. If I remember right, I think that was just Pussy. My grandfather never had a dog, but they would have barn cats. And at home, we had barn cats. And we didn't have them in the house, but we always had a dog. And there would be cats once in a while, and I'd want to make a pet of one, but you can't bring it in the house.
So, you have to go to the bar to have your have a pet cat.
Well, you could bring it to the porch, and where it was fed milk and all that kind of thing. But they were fed at the barn too, and but it. We never had a cat in the house. City people had cats in the house. Not Florida people. And once in a while, I'd go to Nampa and visit my... I had my uncle, who was a dentist, Dr. Bloom, and I had two aunts that lived there with their family. And they put me on the train, and I'd go to Nampa. And one of my uncles worked at the railroad station. So he was right there to meet me. But I was just a kid, you know. And
what was it like to ride the train at that time?
Oh, it was fun. They had red plush flesh on the arms, and the conductor wore a nice uniform, you know, and they were always polite and nice to you. And everything. Charlie Miller was conductor on this little one here.
No.
And, I thought Charlie was wonderful. We had a little yellow station there at Cove, right across from where the Episcopal Church is. And, you know, they could switch tracks right there. And when I had to come to the dentist, we didn't have a dentist. So they'd put me on the train there, and I'd come over here and have the teeth worked on. And if I needed them, otherwise I went to Nampa, and Uncle Pete did. And just things like that. Uncle Pete came to our house and visited every summer. That was his vacation. And he always drove a Buick. But, you know, the cars were very few and far between. And he always brought his chamois and all the things to keep it polished. And he kept it polished, like all that metal on of them, everything. It would just, you know, we'd say the dust here. He was very particular, very clean. My father was too. We didn't have bathrooms in those days, you know. Inside plumbing was just something you didn't have when I was growing, a little kid, you know. And so I remember that in the morning, my father was up at 4 and he built a hot fire in the cook stove. And on the cook stove would be this great big tub. And that was the way the bath water was heated.
A little different than modern
days. A little bit different than modern days, yeah. But there was always ditches of water where you got that kind of water, and the water that you boiled for dishes and things like that. And then the drinking water was carried from the spring. And that was always in a bucket with a dipper in it and a wash basin there, a towel and things. And it was kept neat and clean.
Was that way? Like our
artesian
spring, or did you have to pump it?
Oh, no pumps. No, it was artesian.
Didn't have the hand pump then?
No. I had a hand pump when I was first married. Carried water. But that was the way we lived, and we didn't think what we could get along just as well as anybody in the world. We weren't deprived of a thing. We had all we wanted to eat and what we needed to wear, and we weren't worried about anything. And my dad used to sometimes go out and help the thrashing crews for money for taxes and things like that, and he would sell a beef or something like that, you know. Otherwise, you didn't have a lot of money. What would you do with it, you know? And I'll never forget when Jap Stevens come driving into town with the first automobile. Here he had on a hat, a cap, and a duster. And the cap was tied on, too. And he had on goggles and gloves. And he'd take that lever and push it forward. And the horses all panicked, and they had runaways, and he just chirp, right down the street, turned the corner to go to his town, and it just looked like it was a real effort to turn that corner to go. He really made a show of the whole thing. I'll tell you.
Remember what kind of car it was, or automobile it was?
As far as I know, it was a Ford. I think that's what it was.
Or what year that was.
Can't give you the year. I was a little kid. That's all I know. But I do know that Tommy Conklin's father had a Model T. And that was where we went to Chautauqua when Chautauqua came to LeGrand. Us kids would climb into Tommy's car. Tommy would get permission from his dad. And we were all dressed up and we'd go to Chautauqua. Oh, that was a big. I'll tell you, here we were, scot-free, going to Chautauqua. I don't think we missed a thing. We had ice cream cones and cotton candy and just a general good time, and enjoyed the program. Got in the car and came home.
How did you spell Chautauqua?
I know it was CH.
That could be started anyway.
Now you can go from there. And they had programs, print programs.
Yeah. Who put that on? Or what was
Chautauqua Company. They just came to LeGrand and put it on. And they put on all kinds of them, you know, plays and... Well, anything and everything. They were all educational.
Once a year, like? Or?
Yes, in the summertime.
Oh.
Yeah,
no, I never experienced that one.
Oh, you did? Well, that was a big thing, because that was the one that Tommy's father, where they came to Ford, and gosh, I don't know how many of us went in that Ford. I know I always had the front seat with Tommy.
Was that while you were in high school then?
Yes, yeah. We were in high school. And when I first started going with Don, oh my gosh, that was awful. The boys, we demanded somebody from a Ford. They brought the whole family. So I went back with him to the ranch. And Don was out there taking care of the show cattle, getting ready for the fall show that year. And that was his job, was the show cattle. And no one else touched those show cattle but Don. And he had charge of the feeding, and I remember they had molasses and a diet, you know, like you can't believe and everything. And so he was the same age as I was, and so he came in to the house. They said he always came in. My husband said, Don always comes in. And he came in, and they introduced us, and he just stood there and looked at me. Finally, I went around behind the stove, and I thought, well, I know. And when he's judging, I'm not going to stand here. So I went around behind the stove. He stood there a while, and then he went back in the dining and living room there and picked up a magazine and read. And so I usually did the dishes, and so he came out and helped me with the dishes. We started going together from then on, and so of course then I went home in September. He took me home. So he wanted to meet my folks. So he took me home. And of course they called to make sure when I started, when I get home and everything, you know. And my Aunt Libby said, well, there's a young fellow out here that's bringing her home. I told them who it was. They didn't know whether they liked that or not. And, well, she said they've already left, so
it's
too late. And she was all for it, you see. So he took me home, and we'd been spending evenings together all last summer, you see, while I was out there. And so then he went back to the ranch and took the show cattle on, you know, all over the West, and ended up at the Pacific International with him. He's been doing that ever since he was 14. And so, of course, he didn't get back until, well, whenever the Pacific International was over with, late September. And then he'd go to school, and they kept the show cattle up here in the big barn. And his mother would take Grandmother Townley to California for the winter, and he'd stay with the Townley and go go to school. Now, he didn't when he was small. He had to go to California with them. And he had a ball down there. He went out with the fishermen. He went with the biological survey man. He went with... He was just turned loose down there. And they lived in Palo Alto. And his uncle was doctor of mathematics and astronomy at Stanford University. And they'd visit them. And they had girls, one girl his age, two others. And they would winter down there. And then after he got older, why, he'd stay with the Towneleys. Because they were double cousins, you see. And it was just like home to him. W.J. never had a son. And being an Englishman, you have to have an elder son. So he just took Donald. And he didn't want the oldest boy. Don's brother was older, 6 years. He didn't want him. He just wanted a Don. And so Don spent his summers mostly out there. And then he'd come home the weekends and work for his mother. And she just worked him to death. He was so glad to get back to the ranch. So then when he came to see me after that, he either came horseback. Sometimes he'd bring an extra horse and we'd go horseback riding. He got a motorcycle and he'd come on that in the summer. And then there was a cart and there was one rig or another. And then there was the Model T here. And his uncle had a Maxwell. And he was owning the Maxwell. So he would come either Saturday night or Sunday to see me. And so I was missing some of the Saturday night or Sunday things that the gang was having, you know. And that didn't set up a bit well, I'll tell you. That was not right. I remember one time he came and we were having a party way up at Barker's. And, of course, I went to the party with the kids. And he was coming over, and I told him where I'd be. So he came out that way, and he met us coming back. And in those days, the bridges, or the whatever, that went across the little ditches and streams, you know, were just narrow. And he met somebody coming along, and he went to one side, and he went head first right down in that ditch. And that Model T stood with the back right straight into the air and the windshield resting on the edge of the ditch here and the engine down in the ditch. And the kids all came along and lifted that car out of the ditch just by hand. They all just got out of the ditch it came. I got in the car with him and away we went for home. And so they thought that was funny as the deuce. Those boys did. Oh, that was a blast. I think they had to
help him out
the ditch when they didn't even want him there.